This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Coming up at 6:30, we'll get into some of the NBA action from last night, preview tonight's slate. But right now, we continue talking about the NFL draft and what the Commanders did in it with a pick six at, look at the time, at six.
Six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, let's get to it. Our pick six at six, where we give you some of the best sound of, in this case, the weekend. Adam Peters talked on Thursday and Friday, and then Lance Newmark, the assistant GM, talked on Saturday. And so we start with Peters, who was asked after the Trey Amos pick how he's feeling after those first two, and then you'll hear from Newmark about how he felt after day three.
Yeah, you said it. I think, if you had asked me this a couple days ago, if we would have got these two players, one, and it's debatable, and I mean, I'm sure people would disagree with me, but I didn't think Connerly was going to be there when we picked, and I certainly didn't think Amos was going to be there when we picked. So we feel like we got two players that were first round quality. So we're thrilled. If the board fell to us.
Which is kind of funny because I think a lot of fans look at the board not falling their way because there was no edges available or none of the edges that they wanted available. But they got players that they had way higher grades on than when they than when they picked in those first two rounds. And it sounds like that's also how Lance Newmark and the staff felt about the day three picks as well.
Very excited about it. You know, the it might not be huge volume, but really excited about what was available for us at each pick. And we stayed true to our board and really stayed disciplined. We came into it with the mindset that we could do that, you know, with what we had done in free agency and with what we had done with our roster to get to, you know, the mid-70s numbers-wise and not having glaring holes everywhere. Like, we felt like we could go into this with, hey, this guy is the best player. He makes the most sense. We're not, you know, tied to need. We're not tied to we have to have this. And it's a great feeling going through 3 days with that mindset. And being able to, hey, best player on the board, you know, makes sense. Sometimes it was need and or, you know, perceived need or whatever, but we were able to do what we felt was right every time without really being forced to do something just positionally.
And that's the thing about how they treated the pre-draft, and we talked about that quite a bit, right? That they did enough in free agency that there was no, we have to do this right now. They put a floor underneath them and then said, wherever we can increase our ceiling, we'll increase our ceiling. And I know that some fans disagree with that, especially on the edge, that they have not done enough and maybe they'll still sign another vet. There'll be cuts that come after the draft and throughout the spring. And then obviously there are guys like Za'Darius Smith that are already available right now. But they, if they go into game one next year with this group of edges, they don't have the worst edge group in the league. They have guys who have started a lot of football games and that are fine. They're not good. They're probably bottom half of the league, but you're not going to have a strength at every position. And, you know, they'll look for opportunities in the trade market and or next offseason to continue to build out that room in what will be year three of their build, which is, I think, when we expected them to hit their stride. And again, they did make the NFC Championship game last year.
Number two
in our pick six at six. This was a way that they perhaps could have done more in the draft. Trade back. I don't know that you want to do it if you think as highly as they did of Josh Connerly, or certainly of Trey Amos. Those guys are on your board as high as they were, and you're on the clock. You just don't even really answer the phone. You just run to the table and get the card in. But was trading back something that they thought about doing? Here's Adam Peters on Friday.
Yeah, we got some calls, and it's a similar situation where we decided if Amos was there, we were going to stay and pick. And he was there with another player that we would have stayed and picked at. And if those guys were gone, then we would have traded back, which we had some options to do that. But with him being there, we felt it was really easy to.
And that's the thing is, if your whole goal in trading back is to get players the quality of Trey Amos, then why would you trade back? Like, of course, they're lottery tickets, and I think you can always make that argument that just keep trading back, keep trading back, keep trading back. And I know people do that in mock drafts, but eventually you look back and you're like, dang, that guy that we passed on that we had really highly rated, we kind of need him. Like, the hope is to get a starting caliber corner. There's one sitting for you. They need one. And so take Trey Amos. And again, I know, fans don't necessarily feel the same way about Connerly, but that's how they felt about Connerly, and they're pretty good at evaluating guys. And so if that is how they feel about Josh Connerly, they did that. That's why Adam said again, because that's how they felt on Thursday. And now I also really want to know who the other player is. I need to go look at the early third rounders and see who I think the other player that they would have loved to take at 61. But Amos, need, fit, best player available, like he 3 for 3 at that point. You just run that card in and do what you got to do.
Number three.
All right, number three in our pick six at six. The Commanders did not, as has been discussed ad nauseum, draft an edge in this class. So, why? It's a fair question to ask. Here's Adam Peters on Friday night discussing it.
Yeah, I think it just comes to he was the highest guy on our board. So there was some edge rushers that we liked that got picked. And, the next edge rushers on the board were
I guess, lower than Trey Amos. I don't know. Anthony, you clearly didn't cut that sound because you would never cut off the ends.
No, I cut all of these, actually.
What's happening to the ends?
Maybe it's when it gets put up on your computer, because on my computer they play in full. I don't know.
You
might have a different audition.
I'm not using audition.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe. I don't know why this whatever I'm using is cutting off the end of Adam Peters, but we deserve to hear the whole thing. We also deserve to hear from Lance Newmark. Of course, that was just on Friday, specific to Amos. But here is Newmark on Saturday after the full draft, and still no edges were taken.
Well, I feel like we like what we have in that room. I think we're always looking to add if we can, if the right opportunity presents itself. I don't think we would have not added it. There was never a situation where we're not going to add that. Every time we got to where we were picking, it just made these players made the most sense for us. We weren't going to address edge at any point. There was never any conversations of that, of that mindset. It was. These players made the most sense for us. And like I said, we like that room and we like what we have there. Certainly not closed to, we have a lot of time between now and the season. So there's other opportunities to potentially add there. But these particular picks, we did what we thought was best for us.
And sometimes it's as simple as that. Take the best player available. We did. Not that one. The guys they took. Jalen Lane was apparently the number one player on their board when the fourth round opened on Saturday. So all of the edges that went before him, I don't know they would have taken any of them over Lane. They clearly like Bill, the running back, Kroski Merritt. And then they also, Cam Medrano is a real intriguing dude. And I haven't said this out loud yet, but I've had this thought a couple times and almost said it in talking about Medrano. And Logan and I guess did touch on this a little bit. He brought it up on Take Command. There are some Fred Warner vibes with Cam Medrano. Now, is he going to be Fred Warner? Probably not. Fred Warner has been one of the best three linebackers of the last decade in the NFL, along with Bobby Wagner and somebody else that I'm leaving room for. Let's say Roquan Smith, especially the way Roquan's developed the last 2 years in Baltimore. Like, okay, the chances that Kane Medrano is going to be that, not very good. But his movement skills and his ability to cover are rare, rare attributes to even have the ability, the physical abilities to do what he might be able to do. So if he can do that, Medrano in the fifth, I mean, man. And also, he might be able to line up on the edge and play some edge himself because he did some of that in college, and he's crazy athletic, and being a crazy athlete at that position has its advantages. Now, as a 220-pound guy, he's not going to do that a ton, but as a blitzer and the ability to come from some different spots or just line up on the edge and win with speed, he might have that in him. So probably worth mentioning that as well for Medrano, who I feel like hasn't been as talked about as some of the other draft picks, the fifth rounder or the sixth rounder, whatever he was, linebacker out of UCLA. More from Newmark and more from Peters when we get back. But first, the latest on the world from the world of women's sports. It's presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you wanna at Wawa with customizable roasted or crispy chicken sandwiches. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Pick six at six continues now in the back half. The NFL draft is over. So now what for these rookies?
Number four.
You get drafted, then you got to go fit in. You got to get to work, and so do your coaches, trying to figure out what they are going to do with you. This is definitely, on some level, more of a coach's question than an executive question, but you also want to make sure that, you know, the executives had a vision with the coaches for when they draft a player. So how does Trey Amos fit with Mike Sainristil and Marshawn Lattimore? Here is Adam Peters on that from Friday's press conference.
Looks like a lot of really good guys competing, and Jay Jones and all the rest of the guys we have back there. So, you know, that kind of like we said yesterday with Josh, really the same thing. It's just that's who we are. We compete, and it's all about competition in this program.
I think it's going to be interesting because Amos is going to be an outside guy. And then what do you do with Sainristil? Do you continue to cross-train him and say, hey, we don't know how quickly Amos is going to be available, so we need you to play outside because Jonathan Jones is going to play inside, and then Marshawn Lattimore on the other side. That's definitely a question. Or do you just say Sainristil starting inside and we'll live with Jones on the outside until Amos is ready? Or can Amos be ready fairly quickly? Like, we're going to find out, but as Peters was asked on Friday about his adjustment, this is what he had to say.
Yeah, well, he's shown that that's the other thing about kind of a cool thing about college football now. You don't totally love everything, and I don't want to get into a longer conversation about the portal and everything, but it shows you that guys can transition into different programs and be successful. And so he's proven that twice now. And so I have, and I think we all have, so much confidence in our coaches and in our secondary coaches, especially in how they can develop guys and how they can coach guys and how they can connect with our players. So I have a ton of confidence, and I know we all do, that he's going to transition really well here.
So we'll see starting a rookie mini camp next weekend, and then once you get into the offseason program and all everybody's back where Amos starts, my guess is in the spring he's going to start way down the depth chart and have to work his way up because that's how they do things here. I mean, Jaden Daniels started second last year. And he was the second overall pick behind Marcus Mariota. Like, we'll see where this goes, but I think before long, Trey Amos will find his way working in with the ones in training camp, and then we'll see ultimately in September where that lands. As for the rest of the rookies, Lance Newmark, do you envision them getting on the field this year? How many of them? What roles? Here's Lance Newmark.
It's really hard to predict that. I think we have hopes that all of them can impact our team this year. The one thing I think we're really confident in is they'll be able to come in here and compete. And I think we told them all that, is that when we draft you and when you come here, you're going to have a chance to compete. And whatever you earn, you earn. But that's the one certainty, is they'll be. But I think we have hopes that they'll all have a role and they'll all compete to have an impact on our team in 2025 and beyond.
2025 and beyond, what he said at the end there. It was actually interesting. I talked with Sidney Johnson, the Mystics head coach, about this yesterday because he's got a very young team. And obviously his team is entering training camp. And Dan Quinn's team is not even starting with the offseason program yet. But I asked him, like, how much of your rotation do you know? And he's like, actually, I feel like I have a pretty good idea. We'll see. There's going to be a lot of competition, but there's certain players that I know I can rely on. And I feel like that's the right approach and exactly how they take it. Terry McLaurin is technically competing. Laremy Tunsil is technically competing. Jaden Daniels technically competing. But, like, we know what their roles are on this team. The whole thing falls apart if they're not available. Or you have to scramble or however you want to look at it if, God forbid, they're not available. But they're certainly, or if they're not good, like, that's going to be an issue. Every, you know, they're Debo, they're certainly going to spend time designing stuff for him, having a vision for him. But there's going to be other guys and especially young players that you just haven't seen compete amongst other NFL peers yet, and you don't know what they can do and can't do in the league. You can have ideas, but the thing about saying those ideas out loud to the media is they're out there. You can't pull them back. And so it's better to just say, we'll see. And it's annoying because I would love to know what they're thinking, as all of you would as well, and then see if it works out. But it's just better for them internally and better for the player, better for the coaches, if they let the experiments happen without talking about them very much. Because then if they fail, we don't make as big of a deal out of them. And we don't know that they failed. It's just a thing that we might not even have thought of never happens, and we don't know the difference. So I get not wanting to commit to stuff, but I'm sure internally they are hoping, hey, this guy's going to contribute here. But you find that out through competition, and that's the way they roll in that building.
Number five
in our pick six at six. We got two more from Lance Newmark, of course, the Commander's assistant general manager, hosted his press conference on day three of the draft. Kind of did the wrap-up work for Adam Peters. He was asked how free agency factored into how they drafted in the later rounds. Here is what the Commander's assistant general manager had to say on that.
I think the last couple of weeks we've really studied that hard and looked hard at that and had some conversations with some potential ads, you know. So it definitely is something you think about, you know, hey, we might be able to add this player, you know, in May. So you certainly are always watching that board. We watch it every day, and we always circle back to guys and see where they're at, if they, you know, where they're, because sometimes they don't want to do anything right now. But that's constant. It's on the wall in my office, so I see it every morning when I walk in, you know, and we talk about it on literally a daily basis.
So I think of a guy like Za'Darius Smith. If I'm Za'Darius Smith, I don't know how interested I am in an offseason program at this point in my career. Now, I think if you can get a guy that is interested, great. Or maybe he's not interested in phase one. Maybe he's interested in getting in when they get on the field. Whatever. Or he doesn't want to go somewhere, sign, and then see a guy get drafted and then see, like, oh, great, now I got to compete with some rookie. So he might look at a place like Washington and be like, I can go in and win a job there. I'm in. Wants to see what happens. Maybe he wants to wait till training camp. That would kind of suck because they do a lot of team building and stuff now, but that's also the NFL. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices for talent, and if the talent has the leverage, then you're at their mercy to the extent that you want to be. If you can also say, like, hey man, that's not how we do business here. You either come in now or we're not interested, then he's got to make a decision. So you can play that game, but it is something that as you look at undrafted free agents and as you look at the free agents, veterans that are still available, could sway a seventh round pick one way or the other. Maybe they like the running back free agent market less, and that's why they go with Kroski Merritt there in the seventh round versus someone else that they potentially could have taken, a Fadil Diggs, the defensive end out of Syracuse, who went a few picks later, I think, if I have my seventh round picks right. Last but not least, in our pick six at six.
Number six.
We had one more question for Lance Newmark, and by we, I mean Adam Peters had one more question for Lance Newmark.
Oh, whoa.
F. Adam Peters, Daily Planet.
Yeah.
can you talk about why the quarterbacks made you this shirt and why they think you should be president in your platform, if you will?
Well, I'm just busting his balls. The quarterback room is a great room. The great men in there. And that was a nice surprise from them. It's one of the great comebacks ever. From that room.
You guys can dig in on that. Nice job, dude.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Nice for your boss to come into your press conference and be like, hey, nice job, dude. Wearing a shirt with your face on it. Anthony, do you have any other ways for folks that haven't seen this that you would describe the shirt? It's a distinctive style. I just can't think of like what the correct term is. It's like a fan. It's like almost like a fan concert shirt, where like the artist's face is on it.
Yeah.
But the face is Lance Newmark.
Yeah. I think you did a good job describing it.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your support. I felt it.
Hey, look, anytime.
I do want the bigger story there, though. We're doing like an hour with Fortier on RFK tomorrow and other topics. I might lead with that. Be like, by the way, you've been doing a lot of great journalism. Do you figure out a Lance Newmark shirt yet? Or Adam Peters' Lance Newmark shirt yet? And he says no, then I'm going to kick him out of my house because we're recording in my home studio.
How would you feel if I walked in here with your face on a shirt of mine?
I'd be like, why did my wife give you that?
Good point.
Because that's 100% where that would come from.
She's listening.
She loves a bit. I married the right woman, that's for sure. I'm a radio person who married someone that discovered upon marrying me, she loves bits. Loves them. That's the pick six here on the Team 980. When we get back, let's talk about some NBA basketball, including my least favorite NBA basketball player. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Right now, the Bucks up big, 26-12 in the first quarter. 6 o'clock tip in that game. Bucks fighting for their lives on the road at Indiana. I guess Pacers at the free throw line because it's now 26-13. But Milwaukee, start not.
Yeah, they're still going to lose, though.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
What is Giannis at right now?
It's a great question.
Or is it the others that's really...
You ask good questions, Anthony. The answers are one click away. Giannis, 7 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal in 8 minutes. He came out at the 8-minute mark where the rest of the starters have played all 10 minutes. Who else is having a nice little night? Gary Trent Jr.'s got 6. AJ Green's got 6.
Yeah, they're going to need them. Shooting anyway.
Going to need the others. Pascal Siakam's 0 for 2 from the field. Not a great start for him. Tyrese Halliburton also doesn't have a point. So there you go.
Do you think he's a fraud?
No, I think Tyrese Halliburton's a really good basketball
player.
Okay. I think he's like a top 15 guy in the league.
Even though a lot of NBA players say he's the most overrated.
Look at the rest of that list, bro. Like, how many times does he have to cook dudes for them to be like, no, that guy's actually good? I don't know why. I would want to know why other NBA dudes think he's not that good. I mean, defensively, clearly not his strong suit. But he's a really good shooter, excellent passer, probably really fun to play with because he moves the ball. They play so fast, and he's the head of that snake. And then, you know, he with his length and everything, like, he's not a bad rebounder. So, I don't know, man. Do you think he's overrated?
I think he's slightly overrated.
I think probably people are mad that he was on the Olympic team.
Well, that for sure. But I think also sometimes, like, when you look at his number, like, sometimes he does have, like, really great assists, but, like, a lot of it is, like, basic. And a lot of people don't like basic. They want to see you in and out, cross between, spin move, get in the air, throw behind the neck, you know, corner pass. That's what they want to see. They want to be entertained kind of thing, and he's not that.
He's a great get-ahead passer. Like, in a league that's built on, can we get easy threes? He gets guys easy threes all the time just by having his head on a swivel, catching the pass from the rebounder. Other guys have run ahead, and then he's like, where's the open one? Boom, down the sideline. Boom, cross court. Hit him in the pocket, in rhythm, bang, bang, three.
Yeah, like, I think I just don't.
If I'm a coach, like, I'm thrilled with the way he gets his assists.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because the ball, that's the thing. The ball doesn't get sticky in Indiana. Like, they're real good at not playing iso ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe, like, if you want a good dude who's just going to win a one-on-one tournament, like, I don't know, Tyrese Halliburton's your guy.
He is not that guy.
No, like, he can do some things off the dribble, but he's not going to defend anybody, and he's certainly not a top 20 isolation player in the NBA. But he understands how to play the, like, he's a really good player for the modern game.
I mean, I like him. I do think he's a slightly overrated, but I respect his game.
Yeah, as do I. You know whose game I have no respect for?
Whose?
You know, Anthony.
I do.
Who is it, Anthony? Tell
Jalen Brunson.
No, I mean, I don't like it. I have respect for Jalen Brunson's game. I don't enjoy it. That is the incorrect answer.
Okay.
We'll get to Jalen Brunson in a moment.
Draymond Green?
No, last night's... No, this guy thinks he's Draymond Green, and that's the problem. Anthony, who's my least favorite basketball player on the planet?
Oh, Dylan Brooks.
I cannot stand Dylan Brooks. This absolute goober last night just... You know the phrase tryhards? Or like being a tryhard? The Houston Rockets last night... Bunch of tryhards. They tried so hard to get Draymond Green's second technical foul. So blatantly obvious. They're pushing him. They're tripping, or you know, didn't trip him, but like, you know, oh, Draymond might accidentally trip me, and let's see if I can get a reaction. Let me push Steph Curry over and see what happens if Draymond will come in, which is how Draymond got his first technical, which was ridiculous. Absolutely absurd officiating. Draymond, pure reputation tech there. Because he was actually being responsible and protecting Steph, but also not in a way that escalated. He was being a peacemaker, and they gave him a technical foul anyway. Like, if I'm Draymond, I'm like, well, then I would have just punched Dylan Brooks in the chest. Might as well got my money's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not punch, because then you get thrown out. But can I open hand slap him? Like, what do we got to do here? But the thing is with Dylan Brooks is like, yeah, there are guys in the league who are agitators. Draymond is an agitator. Draymond will bark at dudes. Draymond will try to get inside people's heads. Whatever. But like, Draymond's also an unbelievable basketball player. His defense is outrageous. And I know he's lobbying for himself to win Defensive Player of the Year, which is off-putting. But he's also probably not wrong. He certainly, since they got Jimmy, and certainly in the playoffs so far, tell me a guy who's playing better defense. Maybe there's some guys out there that are playing as well. But at 6'7", his length, his rebounding ability, his ability to stay vertical without and challenge shots without fouling is insane. And the stuff it allows them to do, because he's also great on the perimeter from a switching standpoint, unlocks, you know, what the peak Warriors used to be defensively and what this current version that is a Death Star with Jimmy Butler is. And like, he has no business guarding Alperen Şengün. None. And he's been awesome. And Dylan Brooks thinks he's that, and then he gets cooked, and he runs his mouth, and then he incites other people. How many times are you, Dylan Brooks, going to incite the Warriors into kicking your ass? He did it how many times in Memphis where he awoke sleeping? Like, there were times where Steph was having off nights, and instead of just letting it happen, he had to say something dumb, and then off goes Steph. Off goes Klay. Off goes Draymond. Off go the Warriors. And last night, Jimmy Butler had a pretty rough first half. Scored, 2 points, I think, in the first half? Something like that?
Four points?
4 points. And then Dylan Brooks' dumbass is chirping at him at the free throw line and being a clown. And then Jimmy just absolutely rips the Rockets apart in the second half. And afterwards, when he was asked about it, he's like, I don't like that dude. There was no... Like, Dylan Brooks was laughing at one point. Jimmy was not laughing. He's just a clown. And he's dangerous because he tries to push people over and trip people and do dumb stuff. He is my least favorite player, maybe in all of sports, for on-the-court conduct, on-the-field conduct. I cannot think of anybody else that possibly does or could annoy me more.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Brooks brought it on himself. Like you said, you awoke Jimmy Butler. Like, he wasn't doing anything. He was struggling. Defensively, he was locked in, but offensively, he wasn't doing anything. So the fact that you do that with Draymond on the bench, because he was in foul trouble. So I'm just like, the Rockets just had so many opportunities also just to win that game. The inefficient at the free throw line, the turnovers
down
the stretch. They
shot 61% from the line in a playoff game as NBA players. It's brutal. And that's the thing. It's so amateur. The antics... Combined with the free throw shooting, combined with all the stuff that they did, just is total amateur hour from the Houston Rockets compared to the Warriors, who handled, I think, most of those situations like pros, played like pros, and thus won the game because they're pros.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking at, like just a class organization going up against some youngins. that's the best way I can put it.
Maybe they'll be good eventually, but, I mean, also, their star, Jalen Green, not being on the floor late, buddy.
He's struggled this entire series. They're turning the ball over, under 10 points in 3 to 4 games. Like, it hasn't been his series.
Like, in the battle last night of Jalen Green versus Brandon Pajemski, advantage Pajemski by a lot. My other least favorite player of the moment is definitely Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson has entered a rarefied air, and Brunson and the Knicks tip off at 7:30 tonight, trying to close out the Pistons, that game in New York. The Pistons lost both of their games in Detroit. They are on a 9-game home playoff losing streak, which is tied for the longest streak in league history. Brunson has entered the rare air, Anthony, of Houston-era, maybe it's the Rockets, Houston-era James Harden, as purely from a basketball sense, one of my least favorite players to watch ever. The flopping and the flailing and the constant trying to draw fouls. He is awesome, as was Harden. Like, these are two elite, 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 elite players. Like, some of the 10 best in the world. Quit jumping into everyone. And if you... I'm less mad at Brunson and was less mad at Harden than I am at the world that exists that allows them to get away with this stuff. How... There just has to be a better job officiating it. And I don't think you can change it in the middle of a playoff series because that feels wrong. But in the offseason, the league needs to look at this and be like, hey, moving forward, if you Jalen Brunson, you're not going to be rewarded for it. You have to score buckets on your own merit. We are not giving you free trips to the free throw line because you flail your body into people and you throw your body. Because by the letter of the law, that shouldn't be a foul. Like, a foul, by definition, is illegal contact that creates an advantage for one of the sides. If the offensive player throws themselves into a legally guarding defensive player, the advantage created by the defense wasn't created by the or for the defense, wasn't by the defense. That's Brunson being a dum-dum by putting himself at a disadvantage, and he gets rewarded for the foul call? Like, credit to him for manipulating the system. This is not a shot at Jalen Brunson, other than the aesthetics are awful. But he doesn't care about that. He wants to win games. And that dude is really good at winning games. He hits tough shot, clutch shot after tough shot and clutch shot. But it's just, this can't be the way the NBA wants basketball to be played. And it's not the way the game was designed to be played. And people that manipulate the rule book should not be rewarded. That is my ultimate take here, Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it. This playoffs, and I promise you, next year or the year after, is going to come to a halt because that's what happens to James Harden. He stopped getting the calls. They started calling offensive fouls on James Harden, and at some point, you know, they're going to stop mistaking, you know, Jalen Brunson's craftiness for him just, you know, foul baiting.
Those damn lefties.
Yep.
Why is it always the lefties? It's always the crafty lefties.
I don't know. They're different.
Can't jump over a phone book. But certainly seem to be able to levitate to the free throw line. Knicks and Pistons tonight, 7:30. 8:30 for Magic and Celtics. Clippers, Nuggets. That is your Craig will DVR it and watch it at 7 a.m. tomorrow game because that's literally what I did with the Warriors game this morning. Warriors game with my morning coffee.
That's not too bad.
No. It's not a bad way to go about it. Better than me trying to stay up till 1 in the morning because we all know I ain't doing that. All right, when we get back, we wrap things up with real things real people said into real microphones here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Something special for you tomorrow. Fortier and I have taken quite the liking to the long-form content. So tomorrow, Sam is going to come over to the home studio, a.k.a. my house, and we're going to sit down for about an hour and talk through this entire RFK thing. Sam has been studying it, or reporting on it, I should say, you know, looking at it, all the different angles for the entirety of his time on the beat. And he really enjoys covering that story along with his colleagues at the Post, including Megan Flynn, who's one of their DC Metro reporters. And Sam is super locked into the details of everything and kind of where this goes. And he's also obviously got intimate knowledge of the football side of it. So Fortier and I are going to talk through all of that. tomorrow, and we're probably going to wind up airing that in two parts because we're going to tape that. And so the full thing will be available uninterrupted ultimately on our YouTube pages at the Team 980 and at Craig Hoffman. But part one on the radio tomorrow afternoon. Anything else that we got slated for tomorrow, Anthony?
Biggest winners and losers.
Oh, biggest winners and losers of the NFL draft. So we'll get to those tomorrow. Also, short show because the Capitals play tomorrow night, which is giving us the great privilege of Nationals baseball. So Nats, Phillies, 6:15, Nats on deck tomorrow, 6:45, first pitch with Charlie and Dave. Any more housekeeping, Anthony?
No.
All right, then. It's time for Real Things.
Real things.
We're not going to be sunk this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
All right, let's start in the pop culture world. Let's start with Glorilla, who's a rapper, if you don't know, talking on FaceTime with Rihanna about Rihanna's beauty brand, Fenty Beauty. Now, everyone should know that Glorilla is from Memphis, and she has a very unique accent, which is why Rihanna wanted her to say this.
How you would say my brand name?
I tried not to say booty, because I knew that's what you were trying to get me to say. Fenty Beauty and Savage X Fenty.
Fenty Beauty.
That's Fenty Beauty. Or as she says,
how you would say my brand name?
I tried not to say booty because I knew that's what you were trying to get me to say.
Amazing. I love that she has such a great attitude about it. She's like, I know that I do not say these words in the way that other people say these words, and it causes people to smile, and I am here to make people smile, especially when it's Rihanna.
Yeah, birdiful.
Birdiful. Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets, they won game 4 of their series against the Clippers on the first ever walk-off dunk in NBA playoff history. Aaron Gordon had it. It was a putback on a missed Nikola Jokic shot. So what did Jokic think when he put the ball in the air?
Nikola, what was going through your mind when you let that shot go at the end?
This is going to be bad.
He's a man of few words, Anthony, but those words are impactful.
That I'm still not even over, you know, that game winner because I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
That series has been
a walk-off dunk.
Ridiculous. I love. It's so funny.
And Nikola, what was going through your mind to lose like when that? You let that shot go at the end?
This is gonna be bad.
Turns out, Nikola, it was good. Down 20, come back. Yeah, I turned that game off for a little bit. And I was like, oh, good. We're back. Jason Benetti is a national treasure. You might know Benetti from calling games nationally for Fox basketball. And he also does some NFL stuff for Fox. And he is also the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Tigers on television. And this happened on the Tigers broadcast yesterday.
Are you the Mortal Kombat guy?
Scorpion wins. Gary, finish him.
3-2. That's a high fly ball deep to left field. Altuve back at the track and the wall, and that is way up and out of here. Gary Carpenter does
finish him.
2-0 Tigers.
That ball was blasted.
It's so good. I've known Jason since I was in college. That dude is hilarious. Also one of the smartest, like quickest, wittiest people. Never don't be on your toes if you're fortunate enough to be around Jason Benetti, because you will get got.
He has a great voice too.
He does. Oh my God.
If you had to rank people's voices, like Noah, great voice. Jason Benetti, great voice.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on some others, but I know those two people have really good.
Like, he's got a distinct, like, there is a certain family of voices. And, like, Jason and Kevin Brown, who also worked with Jason for a long time for the Syracuse Chiefs and is a good friend, you know, like, Kevin's kind of in this tree. They're in the Sean McDonough tree of voices.
Okay.
There's a similar intonation to those men. And they're all exceptional. And also happen to be, I would say, Brown, McDonough, Benetti, three of the funniest, wittiest, like all they all have the same sense of humor. Must be a voice thing. All right, that's our show. More voice breakdowns tomorrow.